Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Always thrilled to see this guy. From the Nashville Post, presented by the Tennessee Lottery, the one and only David Beauclair. What's going on?
I'll tell you what's going on. Hospitals are going on.
Oh, man. Yes. That's not good.
Spent a lot of time at Vanderbilt University Medical Center the last week or so.
Oh. Our best dear mom.
We got mom in there with a little cardiac issue. So we're getting her scheduled for a double bypass today. Now we've got that sorted out. We know what the fix is. Got to get her scheduled and back on her feet here in no time. Well, so
good folks over there, and they'll take good care of her.
I'll say this. Everything you read and hear about what's wrong with healthcare in this country is on full display at Vanderbilt Hospital right now. I mean, that I have no doubt the care, you know, the quality of the care is there, but in terms of the respect and the dignity with which they treat people, it is just disgusting over
really?
There. But that is not the subject at hand. I could fill this hour with that,
yes.
but let us move on.
I've been guests of two other hospitals in town. We could do a whole segment, but obviously the Titans front and center, Bokey, and going into Miami, I mean, the simple question is, what do we know about this team?
That's a really good question, too. The preseason was so dismal in terms of the offensive output and the scoring and things that you just have to believe that this team did virtually nothing to try and score or show anything that they're actually going to do in games. Because if they were really trying, then we've got a problem. But I don't think they were trying very much. I think they were keeping it as simple as possible. Same thing with the defense. Although the defense got a few more things done, I think than the offense. But I mean, what we know is personnel, and this is largely the same group of players that was good enough to be a playoff team last year. So I think the expectation still is legitimately playoffs, but you're kind of a little on edge.
The one thing we've learned as all these young coaches come into the NFL, and that is just how insignificant the preseason games are to them, that the evaluation process is primarily practice or scrimmages or whatever. And, you know, I mean, this is a whole other thing leading to if they're going to go from 4 to 2 preseason games and 18 regular season games. But just all in that, we're used to being able to at least extrapolate a little bit from watching games in the preseason. But really, you know, if you look at the way the Titans roster was finalized, you know, we see now that unless you really went to practice a lot, it's hard to understand why they made some of these roster moves.
The one guy to me, it struck me watching the Vikings game last Thursday that there was a moment there, Cameron Batson caught a pass. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? That guy might just make this team if they can find a way. Because that was a guy they gave a lot of opportunities to. And, you know, I mean, he was returning kicks from, you know, in the first quarters and doing things. And it was clear it was clear to me in the preseason games that they took a good long look at him and they liked a lot of what they saw. And so in that way, he wasn't he's a surprise, but he wasn't such a big surprise to me when I really stepped back and thought about it. A guy like Matt Dickerson was one, you know, you have to be in those daily personnel meetings to understand, you know, exactly what they saw. Now, I mean, he is a guy when they signed him as an undrafted, they felt like this was a guy who probably could have been, should have been drafted, and they were excited to get him in here. But yeah, in terms of was he a standout in the preseason games? Absolutely not.
And you go back in Titans history, our Titans history, covering them from the time they got here, you know, I hate to keep invoking, frame of reference. But Perry Phoenix was an undrafted free agent. It was pretty obvious that he had a chance to make the team. Drew Bennett
was obvious.
Undrafted.
Yeah.
We saw him make, you know, big plays every day. With these guys, and they kept, you know, they kept four undrafteds from this year.
Big number.
Anthony Firkser, you know, from a year ago. It wasn't quite as evident. Firkser obviously, you know, caught a lot of balls in practice, but struggled a little bit in the preseason games. And the rest of the guys, I mean, we really never talked that much about Stinney. We didn't. Firkser, we did. But, you know, beyond that, when we were talking Sharif about Finch. The undrafted receivers.
You like you some Sharif Finch.
Yeah, Sharif Finch, yes. Well, because right from the start, they paid him money. He was at a need position and all that. But as far as the receivers, Cameron Batson's name didn't come up a lot in the preseason. You know, Burnett did, and, you know, Devin Ross did. You know, there were a number of other guys. VC did for a while. So, you know, seeing Batson on the team makes you realize that the preseason games were not exactly the primary area of evaluation for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel.
And I want to say this, too. I was thinking this watching that game last Thursday. The decision or the rules changed this year to not cut to 75 after the third game and keep 90 all the way through the preseason, you know, allows for that fourth preseason game now to turn into a showcase and sort of a reward for those guys who have been through the offseason, been through the training camp, and likely aren't going to make the team or are fighting for those last few spots. And from, you know, from that perspective, it was really, I think that's a good thing. Like, those guys deserve that opportunity to play 50 or 60 snaps in a game or whatever. But number one, the fact that the league is going to charge full price for those games is still absurd. But number two, it also shows just how important the quarterbacks are in this league. Because, you know, this game here, and I assume most every game around the league was the same. You know, the talent level on either side was pretty much the same. And you just see when you've got a quarterback out there who can't get the ball to the guys in the right spots or the right times, and how, you know, how the offenses just don't get moving well. That was really interesting to me to see and sort of go through. And I mean, we all know that this is a quarterback driven game, particularly a quarterback driven league. But I thought that was a really fascinating reinforcement of that point.
I do think that's interesting because watching Falk throw the ball and, you know, there's no, I mean, I'm sure he knows the offense and all that stuff well, but just how long it took the ball to get on some of those throws that Mariota would make easy, or, you know, another, even a, you know, a second string guy would make. You did see the difference in that, didn't you, watching that game last Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, it just didn't, it looked dramatically different than what you're used to seeing. I mean, not a little different. It looked to me a lot different than what you're used to seeing. And it's, It really made you go, oh, I can't wait until Sunday the 9th and see the, you know, see these teams do it for real.
Yeah, see the real thing. Mike Vrabel talked about yesterday how much they can put into watching preseason video as they prepare for the Miami Dolphins. Here's the coach.
I think that there's some things that you can take personnel-wise, play style, play type, but it, just like I told the team on Monday, there's going to be a lot of things that come up on Sunday that we haven't been able to just show them. Because one, we hadn't seen it on tape, or we didn't see it last year, or, you know, they were working on something new. So you have to be really prepared for a lot of things and be able to use your base fundamentals and use your technique and communication with everybody around you, whether that be a new formation, a new play, or a new defense.
It's Mike Vrabel, and yeah, there are tons of unknowns, aren't there, when you go into this opening game.
I think that's amusing, though, that he says something like that. Yeah, you know, we keep talking about the unknown with the Titans, David. And one of the things I brought up yesterday is that the running game is so fundamental to what they want to do and what they need to do because there's so much play action. But among the things we didn't really see in the preseason was a sustained running game in any of those four preseason games.
Yeah. Again, it's like, do we worry about Derrick Henry as the number one back? I mean, his biggest runs last year were, you know, in the fourth quarters of games that they were trying to put away. Can he be the guy? You certainly think he can be the guy, but again, didn't really look that way, but then nobody ran the ball particularly. You know, nobody for the Titans. They all, every running back averaged fewer than 4 yards per carry. So, and we said it last week, it's not like teams were putting 8 men in the box and saying, you're not going to run against us. So is it an offensive line issue? You know, did they miss Jack Conklin that much? You said it in the first segment. We don't feel like we know anything about this team, and it's really true. You saw what the Rams offense was last year, so you know Matt LaFleur has lots of things in that playbook.
But the Titans don't have the same personnel as the Rams, and I think he's going to adjust accordingly. But at the same time, I don't want to get too set in terms of what I saw in the preseason, because through the years, Buck, you got to admit that the one thing that we can always count on with the preseason, and that is after week one, we forget totally about it. It pretty much recedes into the background, and our evaluation of the team is what it's done in the regular season, and we just move forward with it. So,
and it's one thing. That's one thing I like about Mike Vrabel's approach. You know, we're constantly evaluating, this guy in terms of, what does he know about being a head coach? Can he do this job? These sorts of things. One thing I like about you've seen some young coaches over the years who get caught up in the preseason and they do everything they can to win these games and their teams go 3-1 or 4-0 and they're like, look at that, we're good, and then they just get their teeth kicked in the regular season when people start game planning for them. I think Vrabel's approach of, the preseason is just effectively another practice, another evaluation tool for us. I think I like his confidence in terms of, I don't need to prove anything in the preseason in terms of wins and losses. So, that is one thing I think is good with him. But say this about the Dolphins. The Dolphins have been one of the more confounding opponents for this team in the time that they've been the Tennessee Titans. And, you go all the way back to 1999, a game down there where the Titans lost.
Steve McNair's worst game ever.
17-0. Yeah, made a hero out of, what was the cornerback's name? I can see him. I think McNair threw 3 or 4 interceptions that game. And I remember that game well, because it was about halfway through the season, and I think the Titans went into that game at 6-1, and we were all talking. At that point, we're starting to go, is this really a good team or not? And then they went down there and lost that game. You're like, nah, this isn't a good team. And, of course, they turned out to be a very good team. But there have been some real clunkers. Of course, there was the Mariota injury game, the great Cameron Wake game in 2015 when they lost 38-10.
Sam Madison,
that was the cornerback. Yeah, so I was thinking like Sam Case or something. I knew that wasn't quite right. But this is a team that has given the Titans fits. So this is one I think if the Titans play well and win this thing in convincing fashion, I think that will mean a little something. A little something more, say, than the way the Titans won the opener each year under Ken Wisenhunt, which ultimately mean nothing.
Well, talk about...
It felt good at the time, and they went down there and beat Tampa Bay,
And Kansas City the year before.
And could we know less about Marcus Mariota in this offense, given what we've seen? I mean, seriously, practice is practice, but you look in the preseason, and... I don't know what to say.
There were no zone read runs with him, were there? There was one designed quarterback sweep that I recall.
No plays downfield.
Yeah. And Corey Davis didn't catch a pass in the preseason. We talked a lot during May and June about Corey Davis looks good and what a full offseason is going to mean to Corey Davis. Didn't see anything about it. We haven't seen Rishard Matthews. Basically, Mariota didn't have his top two receivers, and Delanie Walker didn't do much in the preseason by design. So, personnel-wise, it'll be a completely different animal on Sunday than what we've seen.
I have to admit, though, when I was watching that game last Thursday night, I was thinking about the stat you threw down on us last Thursday.
That's
that no
right.
team had ever gone 0-4 in the preseason and won the Super Bowl. So
that's not to say they can't get to the Super Bowl. I mean, it can still be a good season, right?
Right.
Be a playoff be a team season. And all that, but they're just not going to win the Super Bowl.
So they're watching that, this. This much is guaranteed. Bode, this yeah. does not bode well.
That much is guaranteed at this point. So, yeah, it's it really is sort of. You know, you're kind of at that point. Like, let's get to sun. Let's see what this team is about and what it can put together. Because that was one of the most uneventful preseasons I can ever remember around here.
Well, especially in a year of transition when we're talking about not only a new coach but a coach that is in his first year as an NFL head coach or head coach anywhere. The other part of this is, you know, to me, on the defensive side, we didn't see much pressure on the quarterback. And I think Dean Pease held back, but also without Harold Landry in there, who we were counting on a lot.
And no Brian Arakpo.
You know, who's going to get to the quarterback on Sunday?
Sharif Finch. Yeah, I mean,
Aaron Wallace.
Be the guy. Aaron, yeah, I mean, you know, is it going to be Logan Ryan blitzing? That's one thing that we haven't seen a lot of, didn't see a lot of last year. But I think Logan Ryan is a really good blitzer from the cornerback position, particularly from the slot. And that's a guy I think you're going to start to notice over the early part of the season is he's going to, it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up with 4 or 5 sacks at the end of the year, because I think he's a guy who's going to get a little more opportunity that way than what we've seen under any of the other defensive coordinators around here in recent years.
Any sort of idea on Conklin and when he might be back playing in a game? I know he's been gotten in some work the last few days, but
yeah, knowing Jack Conklin a little bit, and it wouldn't surprise me if he's out there Sunday. Really? I mean, it's been what, 9 months?
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the bare minimum these days in terms, you know, like it's not unprecedented for a guy to get out there after 9 months. I mean, I think, you know, it's a question of, does he feel like he has enough strength to really plant that leg and have a, you know, push back on a 300-pound defensive end or defensive mm-hmm. tackle, whatever. I think more realistically, probably maybe he misses the first quarter of the season, but honestly, it wouldn't stun me if he plays Sunday.
So, I mean, are you fired up? The Eagles play tonight against the Atlanta Falcons
from
your hometown.
I am. I'm gonna pull out the old Seth Joyner jersey tonight, I think, and strap that on to watch the game, assuming all is well with mom and I can leave the hospital a decent hour today. I am looking forward to it. I've done my fantasy football drafts in the last few days.
Take Le'Veon Bell in the first round.
It's funny because in one draft I had the third overall pick and the first two were Gurley and David Johnson, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, and all I could think of is in my head was, you know, NFL general managers talking about how you flag guys for the draft and at what point, you know, do you take a risk on a guy who's had an injury history or something like that. And I thought with the number 3 overall pick, I cannot take Le'Veon Bell if I'm unsure what his status is. So I passed on him. Yeah, I did it. So
who'd you go with?
I went with Leonard Fournette.
All right.
I figure that's a team that's going to have a lot of fourth quarter leads, and he's going to be running the clock out of
it. Grind it out.
Yeah.
No Ezekiel Elliott?
I have a hard and fast rule that I will never draft a Dallas Cowboy. You know, because fantasy football, it screws up your loyalties, right? I mean, like, it really does. And I grew up hating the Dallas Cowboys so much that I will never, ever, ever give myself a reason to root for the Cowboys. So,
atta boy.
Yes. So I in 20 years of playing, or 25 years, however long I've been playing fantasy football, I have never drafted a Dallas Cowboys player.
You need to have a cold-blooded businessman side to him. Just can't business, man.
Can't do it.
See, I'm pretty good at putting all that aside when it comes to fantasy football. You pick who you need to pick.
I can't do it with the Cowboys. I just can't.
Bokey, I can't remember, just speaking in generalities, I can't remember a Titan season where there's so much unknown. just across the board. Because Corey, you know, we're still not sure about Corey Davis. We think we know something, you know, about, you know, some of the other second year players. But, you know, in reality, you know, based again, going back to the preseason, you know, what does that tell us?
Well, and you like the draft, you know, usually you look at the rookies, you're excited about the rookies. This team drafted four players. Three of them made the team. They four undrafted. So there's more rookies who are undrafted than drafted on this team right now. It's remarkable. But then even the quarterback, you know, this is a guy who's going into his fourth year as this team's starting quarterback. Do we say we know a lot about Marcus Mariota? You know, are we convinced we know what Marcus Mariota is as an NFL quarterback right now? It was interesting to me back in, I think, early July, one of the gambling outlets, whatever, put out a list of odds for NFL MVP. Marcus Mariota was tied for 17th on that list. The first 16 guys were all quarterbacks. Mariota was tied for 17th with the first two running backs on that list. I think it was Fournette and somebody else. And it's sort of, you know, you look at that, you say even the gambling community looks at Marcus Mariota as he's as valuable as the best running backs in this league, you know, and that half the league's quarterbacks are probably more important than him. So it's like, okay, he as a quarterback, he's a good running back. You know, like what does that mean exactly? We all feel like this offensive coordinator is going to come up with some things to really showcase him a little bit more, and it'd be fun if, I mean, assuming that's the case, let's see what he can really do. But there again, you know, we saw in the preseason there were some instances where he just threw the ball well off target. You know, all the talk about his widening of the base and his mechanics, and he's, you know, he's going to do this differently, that differently. His throws looked the same. Some of them were really good. Some of them were really bad. You know, more often than not, he was on target. But as I've said before, when he's accurate until he's not accurate. When he misses by a ton. And I think maybe that's what he's always going to be.
Amazing that the miss on Kevin Dodd, to me, sort of hangs over this franchise right now. That's really haunting him, because in retrospect, it's pretty apparent this kid did not even like football.
Yeah, and that's at a position where he could be making a huge impact this year, too. And how about the fact that the guy hasn't landed anywhere yet?
Exactly.
I mean, a second-round pick from a big-time college football program who played in big games and had really good numbers for 1 year has been on the streets for a month now, and nobody's picked him up. That is staggering in terms of just how far off they were with this guy.
David, to talk some college ball. Vanderbilt opened with a win over Middle on Saturday. Got some things done offensively in the second half. Defense, you know, kept the heat on stock still throughout the game. You wrote about the running backs for Vanderbilt and the committee approach. How do you see that kind of developing as the season goes along?
Yeah, that was interesting to me, because we heard all off season that it's going to be running back by committee. When you're talking about Kari Blasingame and Keyshawn Vaughn and Jamari Wakefield, and that's exactly what it turned out to be. Vanderbilt, one of only two SEC teams that had three running backs with nine carries or more, but it wasn't sort of rotating throughout the night. It was Kari Blasingham carried for a little while, then Keyshawn Vaughn did it, and then at the end it was Jamari Wakefield got 8 of his 10 carries on the last scoring drive. So I thought that was interesting to me, because I had talked to Andy Ludwig at one point during the preseason, and he even said it's going to, you know, like we have groups of plays for each player. So he said, but if one guy gets hot, we'll just keep rolling with one unless we're going to a very specific play. So I would have thought it'd be like, okay, on first down, this is a Keyshawn Vaughn play, and on second down, this is a Jamari Wakefield play. But that's not what we saw. Now, can you do that week in and week out in the SEC? It certainly, you can see the benefits of doing it. But after, you know, after 4 years of Ralph Webb sort of being the guy, this is definitely a different approach for Vanderbilt right now.
A little bit disappointing with the attendance Saturday.
You know,
or is this just becoming sort of a broken record?
Yeah, you know, to me, it's not news when a Vanderbilt football game is not well attended. That, you know, that's always sort of been the case. It'll be news if, you know, like with the TSU game, if it's a sold out thing, or even Saturday with Nevada. You know, there's a lot of reasons to not go to that stadium. So I don't think that's I get tired of talking about that. I mean, the stadium issue has become a big deal, and if there's one thing that is true about sports, it's that if you build a new stadium, people come out to see it, and nothing gooses attendance like, I mean, look at the Nashville Sounds. They, you know, this is their fourth year at First Tennessee Park. They're still going strong there. They just had their second biggest total attendance ever. They're
over
one of
600,000.
Yeah, one of four minor league teams that topped 600,000. The only time they ever drew more in a season was back in 1990 when Greer Stadium had been refreshed. And you know, I mean, people like new stadiums. So, you know, Vanderbilt's never the biggest draw in terms of crowd excitement and whatnot anyway, and you have an old, broken-down stadium. People aren't going to, you know, if Vanderbilt wants people to come out to their games, they're going to have to invest in a new stadium. It's that simple.
David, your thoughts on the vote for the soccer stadium the other night? I know there are several different parts to it at the Metro Council meeting a couple nights ago, but the one that was really the most significant was they got 31 votes to demolish some of the buildings that they would need to clear the way to build the stadium out of the fairgrounds, so it looks like it's going to get done. What did you think about kind of how it all went down and just sort of the contentiousness on each side there?
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, we talked about it on here, I think, 2 weeks ago, and I said I thought, you know, I thought it would all go through as originally planned. You know, it's a little bit of a test to David Briley's political clout, but he was behind the plan as it was written. I think, you know, opponents took the opportunity of Megan Berry's departure to sort of create some noise again. And to me, the big thing was, you know, opposition is fine. I don't think the opposition offered any.
There was no good reason for their opposition other than.
But there were they didn't offer any other options. Exactly. Like that's the thing. Okay, you don't like that. I get it. But what do you, and because they all kept, you know, offering the lip service of, well, you know, we think soccer's going to be great here and soccer, but we just can't do it. Well, okay, where are you going to do it? What do you, you know, what do you propose? Give us some alternatives. And I think if they had offered up some viable alternatives, then maybe things might have gone differently. But I think the overwhelming sense is that this makes the most sense for Nashville and Not just the soccer team, but, you know, a part of town that needs a little freshening up, if you will. And I think, yeah, I mean, yes, there's going to be some growing pains involved with it, but it's that way with anything.
Well, and the other thing about it is the complaint that it wasn't a good real estate deal. First of all, you're talking about a pro sports franchise, which almost invariably is going to get a sweetheart deal in terms of the real estate. But I thought the give back was pretty reasonable. The 10 acres that they're going to develop on, you know, with restaurants and hotels and everything else, because you're right. I mean, look at the part of town we're talking about. It's not like they're going to put a shopping center up there or a mall or whatever. Yeah, they could build another high rise because, you know, let's face it, this town doesn't, you know, this town needs another high rise.
Can't have enough of those right now.
And that, you know, they've developed around the area. They've, you know, they've built some pretty impressive, condo units and places like that. But they had a plan. They made as many people as they had to happy. There's minority inclusion. There's, you know, labor inclusion. You know, they really touched all the bases. And I just thought that David Briley and Johnny Ingram and his people did a really good job of doing their homework and going out there and satisfying the interest that they had to get this thing done.
And the creation of that CBA, was a community, I forget what it stands for, but the inclusion that you're talking about, you know, that was an interesting development with me on the part of the franchise, that they didn't just sit back and say, look, you said you were going to give us our stadium, give us our stadium. It's, you know, there was a little give and take there, and or a little action to, you know, sort of ensure more goodwill and strengthen their position. So,
I mean, we remember when Nissan Stadium was built, you know, Adelphia Coliseum, and to help facilitate the whole thing politically, they included Tennessee State in on the deal. You know, Tennessee State got to play there, you know, have dressing rooms there and all that. So there's always going to be, you know, some concessions or additions or whatever you want to say, you know, to make this deal come through. And that's fine, too.
Even in a situation like Vanderbilt, you look with them building that indoor practice facility, which that's what it is. It's an indoor football practice facility, but they added an indoor track where they've hosted meets, the bowling alleys in there. You know, it's same sort of thing. You on a smaller scale, Vanderbilt included as much of that university community as it could, and same approach here.
And the other thing, it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to put there in addition. You know, other than the MLS team, will we see high school soccer there, college soccer, high school football, even college football? There are a lot of different things you can do with a stadium with that seating capacity. It's pretty workable. Will they go after the TSSAA playoffs? That would be,
that's an interesting thought.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things that they can do.
You know what else people haven't talked about? But ever since Trevecca went to NCAA Division II, Trevecca people, if you're over there and you talk to them, you bring up the subject of football, you know, you're never told, no, we're not doing football.
Well, Lipscomb's talked about it too.
It's always sort of a, you know, it might be something we look into. Well, guess what? That stadium will be pretty close to Trevecca's campus. That's, you know, maybe that discussion starts now.
Belmont Bruins football.
Well, there you go. More games for you to call.
Undefeated for more than 100 years. I don't see Belmont or Lipscomb getting football, but I might be wrong. David, great to see you.
All right, everybody, take care.